is the Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 235 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Aurora Winter all about creativity, business, and publishing. First, to some comments on the Claire Taylor Enneagram episode. Matt Goodall said, "Wow, I can't begin to express how timely this episode was. Thank you both so much for this discussion. As fun as it was listening to you squirm and have epiphanies and declare that you like it best when you're on top, it was hugely emotionally valuable for me. Off to check out Claire's Kickstarter." Heather Button said, "This was such a good episode." So thank you very much for that. And in personal news and updates, well, I'm tired again. Not really a surprise. I have been non-fucking stop for quite some time. And obviously I had the week of London Book Fair and Seville. And I have been doing loads of adulting things like sorting out finances and accounts and accountants and wills and power of attorney. And oh my God, adulting is shit. It really is shit. It is the least fun thing ever. I am also struggling because despite saying no to an awful lot of stuff and pushing pretty much said no to everything, interviews, speaking gigs, anything that I wasn't already priorly committed to, I'm saying no to until September, essentially. But I still seem to not have spent this week outlining. And yes, some of it is because I'm still fulfilling the Kickstarter. And obviously the first Kickstarter is always going to be the most difficult. I am going to try and put in some systems and processes, but I think I am after somebody with really high hashtag arranger, Clifton Strength Arranger, to come in and just kind of look at what I'm doing, assess it from a business perspective. Maybe it's a business coach thing, I don't know. I do have a session with my coach this afternoon, so I think I'm probably going to talk about this there. But yeah, I just don't know if I'm doing the right things anymore. Like, either I need to hire in help or I need to stop doing something big. And I don't know what that is. But basically, the priority should be outlining and writing the next book, because that is what brings in the money. And I seem to be in this endless cycle of, you know, emails that have actions associated with them. And some of them are important emails, you know, it's things like needing to do. Anyway, listen, I'm not going to sit here and rant. The point is, I'm in a bit of a clusterfuck. And once again, and I think I'm at a tipping point where either sort of I've got rid of all the peripheral kind of things that take up time that I can say no to. So I've done all of the little bits. And now I'm at the point where either I have to make a decision and stop doing something, or I have to hire help. And I don't know which one of those is preferable. But that, I kind of feel like I've got rid of the excess fat that I can get rid of. And it, like, in the business, so to speak. And now I need to do something a bit more drastic. And I just don't know the answer. So I'm going to talk to my business coach about that, because I am not able to carve out the amount of time that I should be. And the other thing is that once again, I am exhausted and I haven't had a day off. So yeah, I don't know. I'm in a bit of a crappy headspace and I don't really like to bring that on the podcast, but also I like you guys to hear the truth of where I am. And I just am in decision fatigue and I don't know how to get rid of the amount of decisions that I have to make. I don't think I can. So then it comes down to, well, what can I get rid of in order for me not to be doing half the other stuff? Anyway, I think this is so boring. God, I'm so bored of hearing myself talk about this. So I'm going to move on. Hopefully, by the end of today, I should be through the last of the big jobs. I do still have an inbox of 40 odd actions that need doing, but most of them are fairly quick. So I'm hoping that at worst case by Friday, I will be outlining a week behind. Angry, nervous laughter. But nonetheless, I will be outlining. And if I come to you next week and I haven't outlined, I will have a tantrum, probably on air. So let's all hope for everybody's sake, including my dignity, that I have had a chance to outline and maybe read a fucking book. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Anyway, I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to get on with the rest of the stuff. Okie dokie. So Rebel of the Week this week is Ruth. Ruth says, I live in Toronto, Canada, and we have a lot of TV shows and movies that are filmed in the city. At one of these shoots for a TV show called Street Legal, I was walking by a sign that said quiet when one of the actors who was playing a mayoral candidate was giving a speech, and I said out loud, you get my vote. I could hear the fat actor say thank you as the security guard ushered me away. Later, I saw the episode and they kept it in. Oh, that was my 15 seconds of fame. Oh my goodness me. I love that so much because it's so fun. Like, what a fun little rebellion. And also the fact that they kept it in. I love when you get to see like the how it was made sort of snippets of movies. Like, do you remember back in the day when we had DVDs and they had those like bonus scenes and they would have interviews and you'd always see these like outtakes, but also the bits that were improvised. Those always, like, I love them. Ah, oh, there's some in, anyway, I can't remember, but there was some like where people fall over or whatever and they just keep acting. And I'm just like, you guys are amazing. Or, okay, ick factor for everybody who's squeamish. I saw an interview with Tom Cruise and he was talking about one of the Mission Impossible movies where he jumped across a building and broke his foot on the landing, like literally broke his leg, and still climbed over the ledge of this building, and the fucking shot was used in the movie. Incredible, absolutely incredible. Anyway, no new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of my existing patrons. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all of their episodes, as well as bonus content like tonight's masterclass, which is on Amazon number one bestsellers, or the masterclasses that are upcoming. The next one is on voice and the one after that is on long-term career. So we're looking at an author's first book and a more recent book from the same author and looking at their craft and career over the long term. You can also join the Slack community group where there's over 100 authors helping each other, chatting, talking books every day, or join my Poison and Prose or movie sessions. And you can do all of that from as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. Okay, that's it from me this week. Let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Aurora Winter, MBA. Aurora is an award-winning, best-selling author of fiction and non-fiction. Her new fantasy series, Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse, won the Reader's Choice Award, Best 10 Book, and the American Fiction Award. The next books in this series will be published in 2024 and launched on Kickstarter. Hello and welcome.
Hey, great to be on the show with you, Sasha. And I loved your Kickstarter. I'm one of your Kickstarter supporters.
Oh, Kickstarter's thank you so much.
Fun. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. I am loving Kickstarter. I tell you what, though, I have learned so many things about Kickstarter since launching it. I'm one of these people, usually I will do all the studying and then I will execute. And for whatever reason, this time I did like half of the studying and then was like, yeah, fuck it. We're just doing it. And I just launched it. And oh my goodness me, I really genuinely did not expect to make more than £5,000. So I crammed loads of my stretch goals really tight. And I blew through all of them
all
in 24
of them.
Hours. All of them.
Oops.
Yeah.
But your books look like they're going to be just amazing jewels. Like, oh, so delightful. Yeah,
They are
I'm excited about
stunning.
Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to do the same thing as you because I'm like a fast start. So I'm like,
Yeah.
ah, enough with the
Yeah.
studying. Let's just get the show on the road.
Exactly. We'll learn as we go,
Oh.
right? Nothing's unfixable. Anyway, enough about me. Would you like to tell everyone a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
All right, a little bit. So I wanted to be an author since I was 9 years old when I read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that Narnia series by C.S. Lewis. It changed my life. I remember feeling so excited to read the last book in the Narnia series, but when I touched the book, which is called The Last Battle, I also felt anticipatory grief because it was the last book. I'm like, oh no, it's going to be the last, the end of the Narnia series. And in that moment, I realized that a writer is a kind of a wizard and that we can transport people to another place and time with little blacks of dots of ink on white pieces of paper. And in that moment, I decided I would do everything in my power to become a writer who might hope to be a little bit as good as C.S. Lewis. I'm far from achieving that goal, but it just changed my life. I mean, you're a wizard. You transport people to other places and times, and the listeners who are authors are wizards. And I just love embracing that. Anyway, I wanted to be a writer, but then my dad said, do something sensible. So I did something sensible, studied business. Launched a couple of businesses, took an MBA, was worked in film and television, very lucrative, sexy career, going to the Cannes Film Festival, et cetera. But then my heart tugged at me and like, you know what? I really do want to be a writer. And so I've written a bunch of books, including Turn Words into Wealth and Magic, Mystery in the Multiverse.
I love it. I love it. And you've worked in TV as well.
Yeah, like you, but behind the camera. So I was a film and television executive producer. So that means a lot of pitching, raising money for film. I worked for Canada's largest film and television production company, had a $1.5 million budget just for scripts.
Oh,
So that was kind of
wow.
fun. And my new fantasy book, Magic, Mystery in the Multiverse, I pitched it to BBC, and they're interested in a 12-part series. So we shall see. I'm now in Los Angeles pitching it to see if I can get a US broadcaster as well. Stay
Oh,
tuned.
wow. Oh, wow. That's incredible. That's so exciting. And what an incredible like skill set to be able to bring across to fiction as well, because that is the dream for a lot of writers is, God, I'd love to
Yeah.
have my book translated. You know, I'd love to see the you know, it's the ultimate goal. And for a lot of us, even when it does happen, like I can think of a few trad authors, they've only done the first book and then it didn't get the backing, you know, or the audience, it didn't have like the, and so then it doesn't happen. But if you write with, you know, TV in mind, it's a whole different kettle of fish. It's a whole different ball game. You know, a lot of our big mistakes is writing these $50 billion blockbusters instead of,
Yes.
you know, instead of writing a lower budget type book.
Right to budget.
Yeah,
Exactly
write to
right.
budget. Oh my God, you need to write that book. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, forget this whole podcast. That needs to be a non-fiction book. Write to budget for like get your book translated from film to TV. Seriously, that I so many I need that book. I want that book.
Okay.
Please write that
Well,
book just for me.
that's inspiring. I got another book to write. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be an interesting book. There's so many takeaways, you know, from my background raising money for film and television. Like, how do you write a book like, you know, that could be turned into? So a couple of keys, which we're going to get into later, maybe, is like really focus on the characters and the character arcs because people are not that expensive. It's the explosions and, oh yeah, cut to underwater scene with the mermaid. That's expensive. But quirky characters, you know, like we see on, say, Bones or the TV series Monk, those characters are extremely quirky, but that's not expensive. And then, as I wrote Magic, Mystery, and the Multiverse, like every chapter ends with a tiny little cliffhanger or a big cliffhanger, depending on where it is, right? So, how can you add those little cliffhangers? And if you want to turn your book into a TV series, write a series. Don't be precious and write one book. The other takeaway, don't be precious about the words on the page. Be precious about the story and the value of your intellectual property. So, you know, J.K. Rowling made billions because she did not give away her intellectual property. She kept all the digital rights, the ebook, the audiobook, and, you know, there's the Universal Studios rides and all of that stuff. Be precious or be valuing the story. So, how can you bake your theme or what matters to you into the story, not into the dialogue, because depressing thing about film and television, cut, rewrite. So for example, with Harry Potter, she has baked her theme about the importance of love and friendship and a mother's love right into the story. Like the reason Harry Potter survives Voldemort is because of the mother's love. The reason why at the penultimate, or the penultimate scene that he is able to survive when Quirrell attacks him is the mother's love makes his hand. So bake your whatever matters to you, bake it into the plot, not the dialogue.
What about cliffhangers? Any advice on cliffhangers? Because so I my first Girl Games, not first series, my first series under Ruby Rowe were interconnected standalones. So I have like a subplot that runs across all of them, but it's not character cliffhangers. So the and it's not romance cliffhangers because they are like standalone romances. So it's a different couple in each book. Now, while book one sells gangbusters, book two sells pretty well, but there is a big drop off. It is catching up, interestingly, now that the series is finished, but it's not like friends who I know who have like an 85% read through because they've got some whopping cliffhanger. So for my new book, The Vampire Romance, I wrote the biggest, stinkiest fuck off cliffhanger ever. And like my street team are feral over it. Like I'm getting messages every day and I'm like, oh, I think I did my job this time. But I really.
Warned us. You warned
I
us.
did. I did.
Prepare.
I did. Exactly. And the good thing is, I write quickly, so all three books will be out this year. But I would love some more advice on cliffhangers. Like, how can we make cliffhangers better? What is a good cliffhanger? What actually makes somebody want to read on?
Well, it's an unanswered question. It actually ties back into neuroscience. So I studied neuroscience extensively while I took my MBA, and a passion of mine, and it's something I put into the book Turn Words Into Wealth, the neuroscience of it. So anytime you have an open loop in your brain, it's an unanswered question. So what you want to do is before you close any loops, open another or open several other loops. So the brain is feeling a kind of tension with an open loop. And it gets a kind of a satisfaction with a closed loop. So after sex, you're like, oh, I'm done. So the key to cliffhangers is add more questions, create more open loops than you close. What I did with Magic Mystery and the Multiverse, which is a trilogy, although only the first book has been published, the other two are coming out on Kickstarter, is I structured it like a movie. All three books are structured like a movie. So the end of book one is like the end of act one. The end of book two is like all hope is lost, end of act two. Spoiler alert. That's like going to be perhaps annoying for the readers, but it's a trilogy. And then act three is book three. So how can you add more open loops before you close up the loops, which I think you've done a great job because your street team is super frustrated. And is there any way that you could reconceive the series where you've got the huge love affair with book one, but a bigger drop off than you'd like in book two? Is there any way you could create character arcs over like a TV series or a book series kind of a thinking? So could you reintroduce some elements from book one
So I have done
in
that.
the
I have done that. The character. So basically, it's a big friendship group, and across the three books, you see the romances for each person in that friendship group. And there's like a villain that goes through all three. So it's not there are lots of people reading through, but
Yeah, but
also
not as many as you'd like.
I'm business focused and I'm like, how do I get even more? So what I'm doing is I've now decided I'm going to be doing trilogies that are sequential. And then because I like writing standalones, in between each trilogy, I'm going to release a interconnected standalone that will have I guess a bigger subplot going through all of them. But I'll do interconnected standalone trilogy, interconnected standalone trilogy, just so that I get a bit of artistic satisfaction, and then also I make the money.
One thing I am like blown away by you, besides the 1-star review, which completely shifted my point of view on 1-star reviews, is how the frick do you write so fast? I am green with envy. You are like a demon.
Yeah, I mean Clifton Strengths coaching, everybody drink, because that's what changed my life. I went from 6 months a book to 3 weeks, but it's because I'm so competitive. So I write in a sprint room where I can see other people's word counts, and I do not like losing. So the interesting thing is my writing pace will match whoever I'm with. So it's in my best interest to write with the fastest person that I can find. So I've got a friend who was a ghostwriter. So obviously, the faster she wrote, the more she earned. So she is like vicious fast, and I cannot match that pace unless I am writing with her. It's the weirdest thing, but that is competition. So I don't
So you
know
write in
how
the
other
same
people do it.
room,
Yeah,
like in Zoom, or you just.
it's called OWrite, OH, and then the word write.co, and it's a web room. So I can't see her face. I can't see the words that she's writing. All I can see is her word count, and all she can see is my word count. But it's
I love this way. Okay, so my Clifton strengths are strategic, maximizer, activator, relator, and learner. So basically, I'm a great coach because whatever I see, I want to maximize. I want to activate the potential in others. I love learning. I love relating. So it makes me a great coach, but I wish I had more of the winning thing because that maybe would make me a faster writer. But strategically, it's going to maximize your output and activate that. So
Yeah, I
I'm going
mean,
to lean into those.
well, and there is a competitive thread in strategic as well, because strategic likes to take the best path or do the best thing. So, but I'm not a coach, so I won't dive into that. I can't believe I haven't even asked you a single question I was supposed to ask you, but you're so interesting. So, okay, so let's talk about the fact that you've gone through a massive pivot, and perhaps more than one pivot given your TV background. So do you want to talk about pivoting? Like, why did you pivot, first of all? And what were the key things that you did to pivot successfully?
I pivot because I am a restless person who can't stand still. It's a bit of the rebel in me. So I've pivoted, I think, every couple of years in my life. I started my first business in my 20s. I sold that business in my 20s. I started another business in my 20s. I sold that business in my 20s, and so on and so forth. So part of what makes me pivot is I feel like I've done that thing that I just did. I'm like, okay, check that off. What's next? Other thing that helps me pivot is people always end up coming to me and like, how did you do this? How did you get on radio? How did you get on TV? How did you write so many books? How can I do that too? And I'm like, oh, maybe I could help you solve that problem. So I love solving problems, maximizer, activator, strategic, right? Later and learner. But for people who are thinking about pivoting, well, let me say one more quick story about pivoting. So my most recent pivot was 2020 because of COVID. And because of COVID, I was like, okay, memento mori, we don't have forever. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be on this planet, maybe a month. What about those fantasy books that you wanted to write since age 9, Aurora? What are you doing about that? Nothing, because it made more sense, to be a ghostwriter and a publisher and help other people with nonfiction books as, lead magnets to grow 7 or 8 figure businesses. That made more sense. But what was in my heart? So, because of COVID, I'm like, okay, enough already. I am writing those fantasy books because they're in my heart and I don't care if it makes sense or not. So, that was my most recent pivot. So, I think it does behoove us all to answer that question, like, what, if left undone, would you regret on your deathbed? And let's live our lives as if maybe you only, why not live your life as if this is your last year? What would you do? Probably you don't want to do a life that's Groundhog Day. The same thing, only again. So the questions that help me pivot successfully, which everybody could lean into, is what do I love to do? Who is that worth the most to? How can I add more value? And if not now, when? So I think these are worthwhile questions for us to ask ourselves, maybe every quarter. What do I love to do? Who is that worth the most to? How can I add more value? And if not now, when?
So with the how can I add more value, what answers did you come up with? Like, what does that look like for you? What value are you adding?
Well, my first business, my first seven-figure business, was selling yachts into a boat rental fleet in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada. And what I looked around and I saw that in real estate, they were able to offer some tax benefits for renting real estate. And so I asked the million-dollar question, I wonder if we could offer tax benefits for renting boats. And answering that question cost about $20,000 in legal and accounting fees, but it added a lot more value to the buyers because people just wanted a boat, but they wanted a reasonable excuse. They got a 7%, $100,000 boat, say. They got a $7,000 investment tax credit, so 7K off their taxes. And then they could write the boat off at a 33% a year. So $33,000 a year deducted from their taxes. That made a really compelling added value that just required a lot of reading the tax bulletins and getting tax advice. And so it added more value, but it added also value to my business. It doubled our margins from 12% to 24%. It made us the only company in Vancouver that was offering that. In fact, oddly, nobody copied us. They could have done the work, but they didn't bother. And so our company grew to seven figures. I remember selling $3 million of boats in one boat show. And that company became the largest yacht dealership in Western Canada. By adding more value, flash forward now today, I help people create books. What do I love to do? I love pulling out the gold in people's stories. It's that activator, maximizer, strategic part of me, and the learner and the relator. I love learning about people. So how I help people do that is the spoken author method. So I create each chapter is like a podcast type interview. Person gets more clear on what is it that they really want to say. They also get audio and video, which can be used on social media to create thousands of pieces of social media content before their book is even done. The transcript becomes the rough draft. Then I take it or whatever, we turn that into a nicely polished book. And the result is instead of having one book, they have hundreds of pieces of social media content and they are capable of being on podcasts, radio, and TV because they've already talked about it a lot. They know what they want to say, they've worked it out. So that's a way I add more value. The result is I love what I do. It's fun for me. It's fun for the other person because most people don't like staring at a blank page. I call that the spoken author process, and it attracts a certain kind of person to me. I have 30% of my clients are dyslexic. They really don't like writing, but they like talking. So I'm glad to help them. So that's another example. So
So
while
that,
they're, yeah, go ahead.
so I was just going to say, so this makes a lot of sense to me in terms of like a non-fiction author and a non-fiction business. Is that still applicable for a fiction author?
I had exactly the same question. I really thought it was only for nonfiction, but the universe always proves me wrong once I get convinced that something doesn't make sense. So I know you'll be the only one able to see this, but here's a book I helped an author write. It's called Confessions of an Accidental Lawyer. And initially, he was going to publish a nonfiction book about warning people not to be a lawyer. But as I spoke to him, I'm like, wow, that could make a movie. Oh, wow, that could make a movie. And we took two things that actually happened to him, and then they happened in life. They didn't happen like it would in a movie, but I lined up the A plot line and the B plot line so the turning points worked after one add to it. Anyway, so Confessions of an Accidental Lawyer, it's over 50,000 people have read it, which is a lot for a self-published book. It's got over 2,000 reviews on Amazon, and now we're writing nine legal thrillers because he loved the process so much. But it's still what's easier for him to get the story pulled out verbally. And now we meet every week and I review what he's written and challenge him, like, how can the character be more iconic or whatever? And it's a fun process for both of us. But usually you would think it would be nonfiction books. I mean, one of the questions you emailed me, which I don't know if we'll get to, but I'm going to cover it here. One of the big differences between fiction and nonfiction from a business point of view is with a nonfiction book, you can make money with just one book if you have a business back end. But if you're writing fiction and you don't have a business back end, you have to write 20 or 30. You have to have many books.
So
So what do you do in the interim?
Yeah, I think
Go
this is a
for it.
really, really interesting discussion because I think this is where the community is moving. So previously we've been very rapid release, we've been content, a huge backlist. And actually, over the last 2, 3 years, I think we've seen more and more indie authors making a lot of money with much fewer books. And I think there's a few different reasons for that. The first one is that they are sharper with marketing. So we're seeing even newer authors who are either they took to TikTok at the height of TikTok working or whatever, and they built audiences that the rest of us indie authors hadn't tapped into. And so they were able to explode their sales. And also because we're seeing different business models. We're seeing premium books, not just, rapid released ebooks. We're seeing Kickstarters where people are providing products as well as the book, book boxes or, an ex they're creating an experience, which is a more high-end product pricing than it is just a Kindle Unlimited book. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting point that you're making. Yeah. Sorry, I just
I think I'm super excited about Kickstarter and direct sales and Shopify, and all these things are great to lean into. And I would love to challenge the listeners. Is there another business model that you could also create? So turn words into wealth, explore 7 different ways people have made 7 figures with their books, both my businesses, my clients' businesses, but well-known people like Hillary Clinton. Speaking is the highest paid profession. She makes $250,000 per talk. Okay, so she's famous, but my clients, some of them make $35,000 per talk. You don't have to do too many to make 6 figures at that rate. So I really invite people, how can you add more revenue? I mean, I'm sure we both know and love Joanna Penn. She has affiliate links in her books. But a more famous example of that is Tim Ferriss with his book, The 4-Hour Workweek. He thought it wouldn't sell. That book was designed to sell affiliate links. Now, the book took off because he was brilliant at marketing, did a bunch of things really smart. But how else can you add value? And is there a way that you can have a little bit of that value stick to you, whether you're training coaches or coaching or certifying or speaking, or you're using a book as a lead magnet, or you're using a book to sell your series, or whatever the case may be. So I really encourage people. It made my heart so sad to see people put years of work into their book and then never think about how am I going to monetize this and not driving people to something to go to get for free on their website or something.
So what are you thinking about for your fantasy books? Like, how are you, like, what things are you thinking around the book? I mean, obviously you've mentioned the pitching, so like the translation into film. Are you thinking around it as well, or?
A couple of answers to that. The first answer, which may not be the honest answer just soon, but the first answer is I had to coax my business mind to do the fantasy book by saying, okay, that's my art project. I know my business project. I know how to make money helping books. I know how to make money. I've done it multiple times. I've had multiple 7-figure businesses. So how I divorce those two, and this is something the listeners might also want to do, is get clear what are your art projects or what are your hobbies versus what is your business. So as I'm investing in the cover and investing in hiring a professional editor for Magic Mystery in the Multiverse, I'm like, I'm okay losing that money because that's my art and I deserve to have art. God damn it. Bleep. Yeah. And then I know how to make money and I'm doing the business things and I expect those investments to have a return on investment. So that helped me coax myself to write the fantasy book. Of course, now that I've written the first one, it won the American Fiction Award Best Preteen Book, as well as the Reader's Choice Award, Best Teen Book, and a half a dozen other awards. It just today I found out it's a finalist in the Wishing Shelf UK award, which is judged by students and teachers. So that's a feather in my cap, and hopefully it'll perhaps win. I've applied for the Governor General's Award. Anyway, bottom line, I'm super excited about my art project. So how I'm leaning into could that create an ROI is firstly, I've written a trilogy. So it's more than one book, so I can afford to give the first book away for free if the other books are available. I'm leaning into Kickstarter because as you demonstrated with your Kickstarter, you can create all kinds of beautiful things and offer extra things that you just couldn't offer normal distribution methods. And then I'm leading into TikTok. So I think like Aurora Fantasy Books is my TikTok handle. So that's what I'm doing. So podcasts and TikTok and Kickstarter. I'm not yet decided to do direct sales because that's like too many things on my to-do list.
And so it's for young adults.
It's for young adults. It's
So what
not
about
as steamy
merch?
as your stuff.
No, no, but what about merch? Because teens and kids, they love to be branded as part of like their, you know, their gamer world or their, you know, book world or, you know, whatever. Like you should think about merch. I'm not saying you need to do it right now, but think about
I
merch.
should definitely think about merch. I love the cover designs. The cover for Magic Mystery Multiverse actually won an award. And I've had the cover designer do full color images of all of the characters. So that's something I can offer on Kickstarter that, you know, how, I don't know how you'd offer that on Amazon. And then it would be pretty cool. I'm still playing. Maybe it's one of the stretch goals that those character full color will be in the Kickstarter book, like as a chapter heading or something or the section at the end. So yeah, but merch. Okay. Duly noted. I mean,
Okay.
that's how JK, one of the ways JK Rowling made billions. Merch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is like, especially, well, humans in general, I mean, you study neuroscience, but we like to belong. And that's one of the things that Harry Potter gave the world is that it gave it four different houses for everybody to belong to. Right. So,
That's true.
and that's where the merch comes from. That, well, that's where the focus of the merch is the different houses and being
Yeah.
kids being able to identify, oh no, like I'm a proud Slytherin or I'm a proud Hufflepuff or whatever.
Yeah. And
Okay.
then you can have arguments about that. And
Exactly.
that theme of belonging cannot be extracted from the Harry Potter books. So it's another example as authors, if we care about something like Magic Misty and the Multiverse, the themes are censorship, because I really care about free speech. I care about found family. So the love and loyalty between the siblings and the found family
It's
cannot be
almost like
divorced
you're a
from the plot.
relator.
Yeah, almost like I'm a relator. Those Clifton strengths, they're
I like
awesome.
that.
So
Okay, so in our sort of brief email exchange, you mentioned the 27x value of a story. What does that mean? And how does that help indie authors?
this is so cool because, of course, I always wanted to see if I can find evidence that stories really matter. So there's a book called Significant Objects, which shared a study that they did. It was a properly done study. They put 100 different objects on eBay with a story and the same objects without a story. And they even explained transparently what the frick they were doing. The stories were written by 100 different authors. Some were professional, some were not. And they just added significance. That's why it's called significant objects, not pitch hard or sell hard. So the an example of the story would be, here's my pot mitt for sale. It used to be my grandma's pot mitt. I remember her taking chocolate chip cookies out of the oven when I came home from school, and we had some sweet memories. That adds zero value to me as I buy the pot mitt or don't buy the pot mitt, but it adds meaning. It adds significance. And some of the stories were actually quite gruesome and added negative significance. So it was interesting to see what the result was. You want to guess whether it added value or didn't add value or how much value it added, just
Was
creating a story.
it 27 times more likely to sell?
Yes. I guess I kind of gave that away. Yeah. So the objects with stories sold for 27 times more, 2,700%. So for all of us, how can we just share our stories more, whether they're in the books or in the marketing? Like Joanna Penn says, double down on being human. Nobody else has your stories. You might think they're boring, but they're your stories. If you share them, it will add significance. Like, I loved buying your books on Kickstarter, and I probably would have bought them anyway because they look amazing. But the fact that I met you and that, you know, you really touched me with your story about the one-star review and how you used that to sell so many books because it was actually a compliment disguised as an insult. And so it's like that story made a deeper connection for me to you. And it prompted me, you know, being on this podcast and buying your Kickstarter. So don't underestimate even the negative seeming stories, right? They can add significance. And one of the things I think we can use AI for is to write those marketing pieces a little bit faster, but have them based on your stories.
So where do we include those as a fiction author? Is it in our author bio? Is it in our Instagram posts? Like, where do we share that? Because obviously the story inside the cover of the book is fictional and about the characters. So how do we include some of those elements? Like, where are the best places for us to use that? Because I completely agree. I understand what you're saying about that connection. But for me, that's very much on the non-fiction side of the business, even though it's translated to you coming over to the fiction, which I think is really interesting. So yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, like, how can we include more elements of that? Like, where should we share it?
Yeah, well, I'd be curious what your answer is to that. I think social media, in the back of Magic Missing and Multiverse, I've got discussions questions with the author, which I wrote, but they're based on my stories. And it also says, oh, if you'd like to share this in your classroom or your book club, here's some things you might want to consider or some questions. So I'm helping to make the book stickier by sharing like bonus material. Not every book at the end has questions that you would ask at a book club. Not every book at the end has an interview with the author that shares a bit about how did they make the book and why did they make it. But some of the best known books like Shadow and Bone, these kinds of more, better selling books, even by Trad Pub, have that kind of thing in the end. So why not add it? You know, and honestly, the lovely thing about independent publishing, maybe not the Kickstarter, is that you can upload more stuff. So when somebody interviewed me, I'm like, oh, I kind of like the answers to those. Maybe I'll put them in the back of the book. I could do that. Added maps, put them in the back of the book. Okay, now that I've got these beautiful scare character art, I can add them to the book. Yeah. So I
Yeah,
think social media is a great, people fall in love with people. And also for the fiction books, is it possible? Could you see what is the theme? Like you pointed out, oh, relator, right? Okay. So relating matters to me. But probably every non-fiction book should solve a problem. So you can talk about the problem and solving the problem and why it matters to have that problem. You can talk about that a lot. But even with fiction books, like why are you writing that book? Why that character? Why those things? Is it simply entertainment? Because I think if you really tease it apart, if you're really passionate about that book, there's something sticky in it for you. And so talk about that. I mean, I've heard you on a bunch of podcasts, and you talk about why you're writing books in this genre, why it matters to you. And you're like, go ahead.
No, definitely. Well, I remember being at a ConvertKit day, and we were talking about that kind of personal branding and like, what is your story? And I was like, well, I don't know what my story is. And they were like, yeah, you do. And I was like, no, I don't think I do. And they were like, well, why are you writing this book? And I went, blah, like, all about how, as a teenager, I didn't have access to queer romance. And I talked about the moment that I first read as an adult a book with two queer women in it, and I was literally like, oh my God, as I'm like blubbing through this book. And they're like, is this what people do when they read? And they were like, that's your story. And I was like, oh, like, okay. But yeah, like, definitely my Girl Game series is an homage to like female rage. So for me, like, I literally start the book. The first book starts along, so I think I'm going to butcher the line, but it's like, there are two things I love, winning and angry women. And like, the whole series is dedicated to angry women, because I think anger, and especially female anger, gets a bad rap. And actually, for me, I live my life angry because it's super motivational. There are two types of anger. There is like productive and unproductive anger. But for me, I'm productively angry. Like, if I get angry, it's because I want to change something. I want to do something, make it better, right? So I want to fix things. So that was that. This next series is not that. It's all about like not feeling like you're enough, and like that drive to feel significant and to feel like, you are worthy of, whatever, whatever. So that's what this vampire series is about. I know that, but I don't think I've explicitly said that anywhere. I don't even think I've said that out loud to anyone, even though I knew that that's what I was doing. So hey, there we go. I've
Aha.
just confessed on the podcast.
You heard it here first. Well, that's good. Now that you know and you've articulated what motivated you, You could share that story. And also, I think we get shut down when we're asked the question, what is your story? Like there's only one. The fact is, you have many stories, and we can use story structure to help us communicate more effectively. So the hero's journey story structure, which I know you know, Sasha, because you've been in film and television, is, but basically it's the story in most film, take Harry Potter as an example. So there's an initial crisis, then there's a bunch of challenges, then there's a turning point, and then after that turning point, things get better. So you can use that structure to share your story or one version of it, and we always reverse engineer it so that the turning point is the key takeaway point. So in the story that you just told about reading the book with two queer women in it, you blubbed when you read the scene and you were really moved, and then people said, oh, that's your story. Well, the being touched by a story that you resonated with and that you had felt excluded from before, and then you're like, oh, that's my story. Like, okay, that's great. But every story that you have, now you've got these vampire series, this sense of belonging. So actually, the queer story also relates to a sense of belonging, but you might have another story that relates to that. So when I reverse engineer my stories, depending on what I want to draw attention to, I first focus on, well, what was the turning point? How did I shift? How did I change? What stories do I have in my life that relate to that shift? So, and then I could tell a hero's journey type structure. And there's many different structures for telling stories that work with the neuroscience of how people hear stories. So.
And that's a great segue, because I know we sort of alluded to it a little bit earlier on, but I was meant to ask you about neuroscience. So, like, what is the neuroscience behind a really memorable message?
Neuroscience notes here. Okay, so the biggest thing about neuroscience is that as communicators, as authors, as speakers, it behooves us to learn about neuroscience a little bit. So the university teaches us the exact opposite way from how we should communicate. Because at university, it typically teaches you figure out an sort of Excel spreadsheet of what you want to say, and then you send the Excel spreadsheet analysis to the other person, and they listen and they understand, and Bob's your uncle. That is not how good communication works. So the way that good communication works is basically three steps. So the croc brain, the ancient reptilian brain, is guarding you to keep you safe from wasting a bunch of energy or fat or survival by processing irrelevant information. So the first bite of information needs to appeal to the ancient croc brain. So the croc brain is looking for, is this sexy? Is this interesting? Is this new? It's basically clickbait. But you need to communicate a first pass of something interesting. So the title of my book, Turn Words Into Wealth, that's an example of, oh, if you're interested in turning words into wealth, that's already, it's helping your croc brain say, I'll listen for another few seconds, right? Or Magic Mystery in the Multiverse, it's like, oh, I'm interested in that. I'll listen for a few more seconds, right? So that is the first step. The second step is the midbrain. The midbrain is all about people. For us who are relators, that's automatic. But there is a second filter before you can send your full information, which is the who filter. So, for example, Turn Words Into Wealth, it won Outstanding Nonfiction Book of the Year. That is a who filter. Magic Mystery in the Multiverse won Reader's Choice Award. That is a who filter. That is meeting the midbrain's need for who else thinks this is cool. Being on your podcast, Sasha, is a who filter. Okay, Sasha Black thinks Aurora is worthy of interviewing. I will listen for a few more seconds. So first croc brain, then midbrain, and then you can talk to the neocortex. Now, the neocortex takes a lot of fat. In fact, when you're deeply thinking, you're using more calories than when you are exercising hard. The neocortex can only listen for a maximum of 20 minutes. So anybody who's pitching to raise capital, I've helped people do that in Silicon Valley, your pitch should not be longer than 20 minutes. That's why TED Talks are 18 minutes. Like, we cannot listen attentively for longer than 20 minutes. So even though this podcast is longer than 20 minutes, each story, each section is shorter, much shorter than 20 minutes. So in that this little section about neuroscience is a lot less than 20 minutes, but I've given you some chunks of information and done my best to encapsulate it in a way that makes sense and will be memorable. So if you remember this in your marketing, in your book titles, in when you're speaking, break it down. First appeal to the croc brain. Is it interesting? Is it sexy? Is it new? Then the midbrain. Who else thinks this is cool or interesting? And then you can deliver a more detailed message. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And immediately I go to, so I'm also activated at six for me. And I am extremely impatient and I want everything right now. And if it wasn't done yesterday, it was not good enough. And so for me, one of the things that you see really commonly in my reviews is, oh my God, I read this book so quickly. Oh my God, this book is so fast. Now, the interesting thing for me, and I was super worried about this first vampire book is like 106,000 words, 104,000 words. And still, in my reviews, in the early reviews, people are like, I can't believe how fast-paced this book is. I thought I was going to struggle because it's so long, blah, blah, blah. No, everybody binged read through it. And I wonder, you're talking about the 20-minute cycle. I wonder if that's because I write very to scene, like each chapter is a scene. Whereas I know some people, you look at the more epic fantasy, that you'll have multiple scenes in a chapter. But I wonder if we should, if the average reading pace is 1 minute per page, we shouldn't write chapters more than 20 pages long, essentially, so that we keep that concentration. So I'd have to do the math to work out how many words that is, but I know I average a lot shorter than that. They're usually not more than about 10, I don't think. But yeah, I found that really interesting to think about. And also, I would love to do a TED talk one day. That's on my
I
bucket
would love
list.
you to do a TED Talk. That would be really cool.
I would
Well,
love
you
to do that.
want them way shorter than 20 minutes. My chapters are really short because you want it to be more like potato chips. Ah, just one more. Ah, just one more. Not a big commitment to take the next chapter. So if people think the next chapter is going to take them 20 minutes, they might stop. But if they think, oh, just a couple of minutes, like my chapters are maybe, I don't know, 5 pages long, they're pretty short. And like you, I write scenes. And I really don't think you need any advice about cliffhangers because people are racing through your book. You know how to do it just fine.
Oh no, but I always want to work out how to get better, how I can be the best. That is literally inbuilt in me, is to like constantly strive for improvement. So I'm always looking for little nuggets. But I just like the psychology behind that. And even maybe for those people who do write longer books in general, is thinking about how you can still keep the pacing in there and actually having shorter, more episodic scenes, even in a long epic book, might have, because I don't read epic fantasy because it's slow. I'm not interested.
Chop,
I don't like
chop, we
anything.
gotta go fast.
I don't like anything slow except sex.
Oh, that makes sense.
Nobody wants that to go quick.
I find books that change character POV that there's a risk whenever you change the POV that somebody's going to stop there. So that is something to just kind of note because you've communicated, okay, I'm wrapping up this character and now we're going to go to this other character. Then they have to remember what was the last chapter they wrote about that character. So although I do like books that have multiple characters, I notice there's a tendency to stop. So something to
Unless you leave
consider.
cliffhangers at the end of
Unless
those.
you leave really strong cliffhangers 10 chapters ago, the last time you visited that character.
Yeah, because then you know, like that, I will fall prey to that. If somebody's left a cliffhanger at the end of like character A and then we flip to character B, I will speed read through character B to get to character A. And then I will read character A chapter because I need to know what happened. So, like, I definitely fall prey to that. Like, that is a great technique to use.
Yeah, that is a good technique. Absolutely.
I'm really upset, but we are at the end of the podcast. I can't believe I didn't get to ask all of the exact questions that I'd sent you, but you are deeply fascinating. And I think you should write a memoir. But this is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell everyone about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
Oh, I love that you asked people this question. That made me think. I'm like, okay, what? Okay, I have two really short stories. One is a demonstration of how I I came out of the womb basically as a little rebel. So my father was a professor, and I think I was 4 years old, and he had business people over for dinner and wanted me to eat my peas. I refused. So he sat me up to my bed, go to your room and think about that. And I stomped up the stairs and he was like haranguing me. I turned around and I threw up on And my mother always liked to tell that story. She's like, never assume that a 4 year old can't have her way. And
Oh
she
my
made
God, I
my
love
point.
it.
I'm like, and he had like important guests over for dinner. So that did not go so well for him. But
Oh, that's
my.
so funny.
So I think I arrived here as a little bit of a rebel, as you can probably tell from always, shifting and changing businesses from one thing to another. I think the most recent-ish rebel was choosing to take my MBA when I turned 50. And my older brother, who's a very successful entrepreneur, he's like, "That makes no sense. Your business is going fine. Why would you give up the income to take time off to take your MBA?" And I'm like, "I want to." So I did. And I think, it comes back to that memento mori. Actually, my husband died suddenly beside me when he was 33 and I was 31 and our son was 4. So it helps me every now and again to remember, we even if you seem healthy, you don't even know if you have tomorrow. So what I ask myself, what do I really want to do? What really matters? What will I regret if it doesn't happen? And there's so many things that matter more than just money. And I think creative self-expression is one of them. Freedom of speech is very important to me. And so that's in the theme of magic, mystery, and the multiverse. And I don't know. I think this rebel, we all need a bit of rebel if we're going to thrive,
Well, I
or
think
a
that's,
lot.
yeah, I think that's the other one is being ourselves, right? Like living our life as authentically as we can and finding ourselves. Because, without that, we can't really live a joyful life. But I love that, and I love how much you embrace like living and living for the moment. And yeah, I love that. It's funny because tomorrow morning at the butt crack of dawn, we are going to Venice. And it's because, yeah, and Venice is number two on my bucket list. And I've wanted to go for as long as I can remember. And like we've been putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. And I hit a few financial goals and I was like, right, that's it. So 2 weeks ago I booked it and we're going tomorrow. And like it's like I don't do spontaneity. I plan in, but this is like super spontaneous for me. And I'm like, but also it's living that like, what the fuck is the point of having all this money if we're not going to enjoy it? If I'm not going to fill my kid's head with memories and culture and countries and experiences. Like I want to die with a very full brain, So yeah.
I love it. I loved Venice. The first time I went, I was like, "Oh, it's going to be all stinky and rats and sewers." No, Venice is absolutely magical. You're going to have such a great time. Oh, and save money to buy all of the. They have so many great leather products. I must have bought like a half a dozen purses when I was there. I'm like, oh, I need it in this color and that
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find out more about you, your books, your services, anything else you'd like to add?
color. Thanks for asking, Sasha. Well, people can go to my website, which is my name, Aurora Winter, AuroraWinter.com. And there they can find out about the various things I do. They can get a free thought leader launch starter library. They can also find out about magic, mystery, and the multiverse. And they can get some gifts if they go to magic, mystery, and the multiverse. If fantasy is more their thing, they can also find the link to Kickstarter, magic, mystery, and the multiverse. Magic, mystery, and the multiverse, the first book in that trilogy, is available wide. So if they don't want to find out more about me and they just want to read, they can go grab a copy. And the other book we talked about, Turn Words Into Wealth, is available on Amazon. It's in KU. And a book that we didn't talk about, Thought Leader Launch, 7 Ways to Make 7 Figures with Your Million-Dollar Message, is wide. And I do have a
Excellent.
memoir, which is also available.
Oh, that does not surprise me. That does not surprise me. That I fucking love that. You need to have a memoir. Your life is so interesting.
I love this idea about the book that I should write about how to get your book turned into TV. I
If
might
you
just take you up on that.
write that book, come back on the podcast to talk about it.
All
Yeah.
right. Thank you so much for your time. It was really fun connecting with you and doing this show.
Oh no, it was lovely. I wish we could have talked for longer, to be honest. I find you fascinating. So yeah, thank you very much. And of course, a gigantic thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. I'm Sasha Black. You are listening to Aurora Winter, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast. Next week, I'm joined by Michelle Glogovac, and we're talking all about how to pitch yourself and podcasts. So join me next week for that. Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.